Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Chelsea stars went to Wembley and hit the skids when Liverpool beat them with a bunch of kids. Pochettino's side somehow failed to come out on top, and Klopp's farewell loving tour had a famous Wembley Stadium stop. Elsewhere, the Ratcliffe era at United is underway, with Fulham showing up to ruin the day. Leverkusen keep making German history while Bayern Munich finally solved their losing streak mystery. And in MLS, there were big wins for Portland and DC, but we all know Bank of America Stadium was the place to be. My name's Ryan Bailey. Joining me today, your friend and mine, Mr. Joseph Lowry. Hello, Joe.
I am honored to be in the presence of a rock star, and Graham has not been introduced yet, but I believe Graham is honored as well. Ryan, you had maybe the most interesting weekend that, well, okay, Taylor exists. Never mind. It wasn't that interesting compared to Taylor, but Taylor's not here. Ryan, and you did something really cool, and I can't wait to hear about it.
Thanks very much. Do you mean that I had a chat with Graham via text? That was pretty cool. Hello, Graham Ruthven.
Hello, Ryan, or should I say Billy Joe Armstrong from Wish.com, as you're now known.
Yes, for anyone who didn't see this, I played guitar at Bank of America Stadium this weekend at halftime. There's like a fan thing they're going to start doing this year where a fan leads a chant with a guitar, because no other MLS club does that, right?
No, not at all. None in Nashville or anything like that.
No, yeah, exactly. So that's the whole thing. I played guitar in front of 62,000 people. I thought I'd be much more nervous than I was, and it was fine. Yeah, it was very cool.
Like, genuinely
very cool. Yeah, and I think Graham and I Ryan's trying to downplay it because he's a humble guy who likes Lululemon, and that's just the man that he is. Like, Ryan's not going to go all out here, but I have several follow-up questions. Ryan, you said you weren't as nervous as you thought you were going to be. Were you nervous at all, or did it just feel like you were playing the normal gig?
I think I did a sound check earlier, which allayed any of my fears, because, like, basically when you play on a stadium PA, this is nerdy stuff, but, like, there's a delay. So it's like a half second to a second delay. So you need in-ear monitors to make sure you can follow the beat. And when one of those falls out of your ear immediately after you start playing, it gets tricky. That's what happened, but I still managed to stay in lock somehow. I don't know. But yeah, to answer your question, Joe, I like playing bars and stuff, and sometimes I get nervous about that. But here, I was like, I mean, it's like five bar chords. It's fine.
Does 60,000 people not turn up to your bar gigs? No?
Not usually. It's usually around the 55 mark, to be honest.
Right, 55,000. Yeah. Right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I imagine that was some buzz. Like, I don't play guitar, so I would just be buzzing to play any kind of musical instrument. But to play it to that many people and in a stadium setting, I imagine it was a buzz.
I'm not going to lie, Graham. It was pretty cool. And maybe my kids... No, they still think I'm an idiot, actually.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Did you get any kind of... Because your kids were at the game, right? Your whole family's at the game. Did you get any kind of respect from your children, or were they just like, yeah, okay, Dad?
The best respect I got was, I think they watched it.
I love that.
Yeah, vaguely interested. No, but why don't we tell you what? We'll talk about this more on the Patreon feed. Patreon.com/Total Soccer Show. My attempt to indoctrinate my children into the world of soccer will be discussed as well, because this was one of the first attempts to do so. So, Patreon.com/Total Soccer Show for all our bonus content, including bonus podcasts, videos, and access to the Discord where all the cool kids are hanging out. No Taylor Rockwell today on the weekend review, just the power trio of Graham, Joe, and Ryan. Should we get to it, guys? Oh, before we get to it, by the way, Graham, big news from the weekend from Real Madrid. I don't know if you saw about this. Apparently, the club have requested to La Liga to change the date of their final league game because of T-Swift. T-Swift is performing at the Bernabeu at the either May or start of June. They've asked to move to prep for the stadium for what may be a second booking at the Bernabeu. And it got me looking at, did you know how many soccer stadiums she's playing this summer? I've got a list.
A good number of them, because I know Lyon have an issue as well with if they end up in the relegation playoff match in Ligue 1. I think Swifty is also causing a logistical issue in France. But go through the list, please.
Yeah, so I've got Benfica a couple of nights, Lyon, as you mentioned, Murrayfield in Scotland's first city, Edinburgh, as well. Three nights at Anfield, eight nights at Wembley Stadium, eight of them. Ajax, San Siro, Schalke, Wolfsburg, Hertha Berlin, the Olympic Stadium in Berlin. She's playing to a lot of people there. That's impressive. Yeah.
Mm. Is she going to have a European soccer boyfriend to help sell some tickets? Is that not the conspiracy theory? The whole thing, isn't it?
Joe, is there a Travis Kelce equivalent in
that's
European
what I was,
soccer?
That's what I was just trying to think of. I think from a facial hair perspective. Oh, tough, Graham. I was thinking Sergio Ramos. I don't know what we feel about the beard tie-in there. I don't think that's the right matchup for Taylor Swift personally, but. You know, maybe that's right. What I really want to know, Ryan, is can Taylor Swift rock in front of a crowd like you can? That's okay. Yeah, she can. That was a stupid question.
She probably can. Yeah, I mean, comparable crowd like sizes, it. Me and her. Yeah, very much so. Comparable skill levels, of course.
People are talking. That's all I'm saying.
How about Enzo? Is Enzo European? Well, he's not European, actually. But
John McGinn. Anyway.
John McGinn. Very good.
Weirdly into that, actually.
The ballads that will be written about a certain part of John McGinn's body, Graham. Yeah. It'll be wonderful. Can't wait. Let's move away very swiftly from that to the Carabao Klopp final. Excuse me, the Carabao Cup final. Liverpool with a 1-0 win over Chelsea after extra time. Liverpool winning for the 10th time in the League Cup final, the 51st trophy in their history. Graham, they beat what Gary Neville referred to as the blue billion pound bottle jobs. The blue billion pound bottle jobs, which I don't know if there's... Joe, do you get that? Do we need a US translation for that?
Like they fail at the end, but they spend a lot of money and they bottle it. They fail.
Nailed it.
Exactly. Yes. They wear blue and they choked is what that is.
That's a better way to put that.
I love that line, because on the UK broadcast, it was Peter Drury who was doing the commentary. And you know what Peter Drury's like. There was all this poetry that he clearly spent a lot of time on. And
how
Gary
many Greek
Neville
gods
just
were referred to, Graham?
Yeah. More than one. More than was necessary. And at the end of the match, Gary Neville just kind of spits out that line of Klopp's kids versus the billion pound bottle jobs. And that's the one that stuck. I've seen that in countless articles today.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, as we mentioned, Liverpool, finishing the game with a mixture of first team, academy kids, ball boys, small children from the crowd. No Salah, Nunes or Jota in this one. Ryan Gravenberch off after a nasty challenge from Moises Caicedo as well, which probably wasn't punished to its full extent. Yeah, three teenage rookies in the mix for Liverpool as well. Under the circumstances, Graham, this was an incredible win for Liverpool, but also an incredible defeat for Chelsea. Yeah. Like, you Chelsea fans are asking how they lost this, and Jurgen Klopp saying this was one of the best moments of his career, arguably so.
Yeah, it was an incredible outcome, and I think you could sense what Klopp's just saying there about it being one of the best outcomes of his entire managerial career. You could sense that in the celebrations, where every Liverpool player and coaching staff member had this big grin on their face where it was almost, they couldn't believe it, that they'd actually managed to pull it off. And what we're talking about there, Klopp's kids versus the billion-pound bottle jobs, that is ultimately, whether it's fair or not, the narrative out of the match. This Liverpool team was nowhere near the Liverpool team that we've seen this season up until now. They were without... So let me get the full list of players here. No Salah, no Nunes, no Jota, no Alisson, no Matip, no Thiago Alcantara, no Curtis Jones, and then Gravenberch comes off injured in the first half.
Billy Joel song you're listening off here, Graham.
Well, you would know about that now. but Liverpool just never fell out of the match. They gave themselves a chance, and Chelsea did some good things and certainly applied some pressure, and Kelleher had to pull off some incredible saves. Excuse me. But, as I say, Liverpool gave themselves a chance, and the winning mindset clearly goes all the way through the club, because it seems like these kids have it as well. It was an incredible achievement. Some of the young players that ended up in the team at the end of extra time, so we had Bobby Clark. Conor Bradley, by the way, is an incredible talent. Every match I've seen him play for Liverpool, he's sensational. He's like a right-sided Andy Robertson. He doesn't quite have the passing range of Trent Alexander-Arnold, but he is highly influential down that right side. James McConnell, Jadon Dans, those are two players I have to admit I, I don't know if I'd heard of. Jarrell Kwanza, I have heard of him. He looks like a very talented young central defender, sort of Virgil van Dijk. There's a feeling of Virgil van Dijk about him. But yeah, an incredible achievement for Liverpool. I'm not sure it reflects that well on Chelsea.
No, Joe, surely not. Chelsea now lost 6 consecutive Wembley finals, half of those against Liverpool. Yikes. Now, I was pretty confident in the draw after 90 minutes. In fact, I visited a betting emporium and made my claim clear there, because I think it's something like 4 of the last 5 against these sides have been draws.
Made your claim clear there. Did you actually give them any money, or did you just walk in and say,
it will be a draw after 90?
I declare tie! That's what I did when I walked in. Yes. Thank you. Joe, anyway, Chelsea, not good.
Well, I don't know, fellas. Honestly, I didn't think this was the worst Chelsea game that we've seen. Granted, low bar for the Blue Bottlers, which is a bar in and of itself. I thought, generally speaking, they had solid chances. There was a lot of weird symmetry in this game. I don't know if you guys noticed this. Chelsea disallowed goal in the first half. Then Cody Gakpo header off the post for Liverpool in the first half. Second half, Liverpool have a goal disallowed. Then Gallagher hits a shot off the post. Like, there were a lot of moments where it felt like this game was maybe not quite end-to-end, but it's not like Chelsea didn't have looks. The part that I do agree with from the general narrative here is that it does seem very much like Chelsea have issues closing out games. And very much in this game, they had an issue dealing with Virgil van Dijk in the air. And if there was going to be a way that this game was won for Liverpool, it really felt like that was going to be the way that the ball was going to get over the line, because van Dijk is so difficult to stop on those set-piece moments. And if one team needed sort of this differentiating factor to edge just a little bit ahead of the other, it did feel like it was going to be Liverpool, despite the fact that I thought Chelsea had some good looks as well.
Yeah, Joe, I really struggle to assess Chelsea as an attacking outfit at the moment, because with this performance, if you ignore the fact that they didn't score a goal, I liked a lot of what their attack did, and that's been the story with Chelsea for so long, even going back to last season. So usually you'd think, well, you know, there'll be a correction, but at what point do you start to kind of question your own methodology with that? This is the thing with them. If we're broadening out a little bit, this is the thing with XG that I struggle with. If your XG shows you're not finishing chances, you might need better finishers, that's kind of where I'm at with Chelsea. Nicholas Jackson, I think there's a lot to like about Nicholas Jackson, but he is raw. I think he should probably be a developmental player behind a more experienced centre-forward. Gallagher is excellent at possession, but he's underperforming his XG as well this season, although he was decent in this match, and most games you watch him, he does have opportunities. The one I'm looking at mainly is Raheem Sterling. So he still gets himself into good positions, but the composure, the sharpness in front of goal that we used to see from him at Manchester City and maybe previously at Liverpool, it's just not there. And it hasn't been there for a good while for Raheem Sterling. Had a good start to the season and maybe a good couple months, but even going back to last season, it didn't feel like that sharpness was there. And the other thing with Chelsea is the decision-making from them is so frequently poor. There were moments in this match where they just ignore a teammate in a better position. I think Enzo Fernandez has one where he just has to lay it back to Conor Gallagher inside the box. He's got a much better sight of goal, and he kind of fumbles the shot or the shot is saved. I can't quite remember. I guess there is now at least some consistency in Pochettino's lineup, so he knows what his strongest midfield and attack looks like. But that talking point about Chelsea missing chances, it just refuses to shift. It's been this way as long as I can remember now.
Yeah, it's just pretty embarrassing stuff, Joe. I think what might be the most positive aspect for me for Liverpool out of this one is the way the club appears to be set up for the future. The post-Klopp era is looking pretty bright. The 5 players aged 20 or under featuring in this game, the average age at the end of the game was below 22. It does, if you're a Liverpool fan, you're feeling pretty warm and fuzzy that things might be okay given the pipeline they've got and given the sheer contrast of what Chelsea were able to put up here.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And Graham ran through all of the players that Liverpool were missing in this game, and the young kids stepped up. It was a lot of players that folks that are sort of just casually dipping in and out of the Premier League, and even ones like Graham, who are dialed all the way into the Premier League each and every single week, still aren't that familiar with. And the fact that there's still this talent that we've not just seen on the field in this game, but that we have seen start to trickle in. You talk about Bradley, you talk about Curtis Jones and Harvey Elliott. The fact that Liverpool are getting legitimate contributors out of their younger players in the squad, out of the academy, is a good sign for what's to come. Because let's face it, Liverpool have overperformed relative to their financial spend against Manchester City over the last several years. The fact that they have been in and around the title conversation so frequently is a very, very difficult thing to sustain when you're not owned, at this point in the Premier League, by an oil nation. So the fact that Liverpool aren't that and are not willing to go out there and spend the kind of money that Manchester City are willing to spend. They do their transfer business in a different way, typically earlier, more under the radar, shopping in less high-profile places. One might say a lower-profile place, if one were to talk with good English. Like, the fact that Liverpool are out here trying to look in more stealthy opportunities to go and find players, the academy is part of that. And it is almost always going to have to be part of that for this club to continue to compete at the very, very top of the Premier League. So it's a good sign for what's to come, especially in a moment that is incredibly transitional for the club as a whole with Jurgen Klopp heading out the door.
Did anyone catch Darwin Nunez's celebration at full time and extra time? So he's sitting in the stand, and as soon as that whistle goes, he is off. He's meant to be injured. He's running down the steps. He's jumping over the gate onto the pitch. It was just very Darwin Nunez. It encapsulated everything I love about him.
Wonderful. If we're talking post-game as well, can I say the trophy collection, obviously famously at Wembley Stadium, you go up the steps and you go into the stands to collect the trophy, as the old Wembley you did and you do currently. Like, the way they present it on the broadcast, where you have 10 minutes of them like in a staircase, a poorly lit staircase, and then you go up to the top where the trophy is, and certainly on the broadcast I was watching, it was like a tight shot of just like the trophy being underlit with like a couple of flashlights from Walmart, from what I could tell. Like, this is a big production, guys. Why didn't you make it look better? It's embarrassing.
So you're not a fan of the vibe of like your dad taking a selfie accidentally and the flashlight being on at the
telling
same time.
Telling a ghost story. It was a ghost story lighting. Yeah. That's what they were doing.
It is weird. They've done that for like two or three seasons, Carabao or whoever the hosting company is. I'm with you, Ryan. I'm not a fan of it.
Indeed. All right. Well, congratulations to Liverpool. Commiserations to Chelsea. Chelsea fans, if you get to a final at Wembley and you're facing Liverpool, maybe just don't buy the ticket next time around, because you know what's going to happen. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Premier League around the continent and MLS chat, of course. All that coming shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to our weekend review. We go now to the Premier League, where Arsenal pulled off a 4-1 win over Newcastle United. The Gunners 2 points off the lead in the Premier League. Joe, we've got an Arsenal side who've had 6 consecutive wins now. They're looking pretty dominant. It's a nice tight race we have at the top there.
Well, and it's a breath of fresh air for Arsenal after that disappointing performance in the Champions League in the middle of the week. That loss to Porto that we talked about in relative depth on that Champions League review show, that was not a good showing from Arsenal. They really struggled to create chances. That was the single biggest thing that held them back in that match. And it's been the single biggest thing that has plagued them this season. They've been elite defensively in the Premier League. They've been elite on set pieces. More on that in 2 seconds. But they've struggled relative to the best of the best in the Premier League to go out there and create consistent chances against a lower block in the final third. Arsenal in this match, they had the ball. Like, Newcastle were going to let them have the ball. Yes, there's this intensity under Eddie Howe that Newcastle have that doesn't make them quite as passive as Porto were in the middle of last week. But Arsenal were going to have to be the protagonists in possession in this game, and they actually got the job done. In open play, really nice cutbacks consistently from that right side. Martinelli has a good one early on drifting over, and then you've got Bukayo Saka having some real success on the right side of the box as well. A lot of nice looks there. And then the set pieces, guys. This has been such a consistent theme for Arsenal throughout the season. The Athletic had a great piece on this topic. The quote from that one is, quote, "The 2 corner goals Arsenal scored against Newcastle increased their tally to 13 in the Premier League this season, equaling their record for most goals scored from corners in a single Premier League campaign since Opta started collecting data about 15 years ago now. And the season's not even over yet. Like, there are months left in this campaign, and Arsenal continue to be so dangerous from corner kicks. They have this one routine that we saw pop up over and over and over again. It was Kai Havertz, it was Gabriel and Kivior sort of at the back post. You had Saliba and Ben White more inside the six-yard box, and you had either Martinelli and later it was Trossard at the penalty kick spot. And with that depth, you have runners shifting from the back post towards the front post. You have pretty even spacing across the goal mouth. And then a runner oftentimes crashing from the penalty kick spot towards the back post. And that variety in different angles and late arriving runners in different spots, Newcastle really struggle with that routine. Other teams have struggled with it as well. Arsenal's effort into set pieces is very much paying off with points this year.
Yeah, such a key strength for them. Everyone knows it's a strength, but actually stopping it is another matter altogether. I thought this was... I don't watch every single Arsenal match, but I can't imagine I've missed many this season in the Premier League. This was maybe the most impressive performance I've seen from them this season. I remember before Christmas, we would talk about Arsenal. I think they were maybe top of the Premier League table at Christmas time or nearabouts anyway. And the caveat to that would be we didn't think they'd been as impressive as they were last season. I don't know if we can say that now. We certainly can't say it about the way they've been playing the last like month or so, because this is the third league match in a row that they've just completely blown away the opposition. 15 goals in their last three games. The first half performance in this match was so aggressive. They dominated the ball. They won it back within seconds when they lost it. And Newcastle were frankly overwhelmed. Arsenal won the ball in the attacking third 11 times in the first half, which was very, very impressive. And you can sense the panic in Newcastle when it's 2-0 after 24 minutes. And Arsenal are still all over them. They're not dropping back. Bruno Guimaraes was rattled. I thought it was a really difficult match for Newcastle, and they were just never able to handle what Arsenal threw at them. And of course, we've seen Arsenal produce these sort of performances recently against West Ham and Burnley. But to do it against Newcastle is altogether more impressive. Just to turn it over to Newcastle for the moment, I think the most sobering thing for Newcastle is that Eddie Howe made changes to try and combat what Arsenal would do to them. So Dan Burn, he came out of the lineup, and it was Tino Livramento who played at left back. And that was to try and prevent Saka from just bursting through the Newcastle defence. Dan Burn is the size of a tree. I think they anticipated problems against the speed of Bakaya Saka, so they put in someone who could maybe match that speed. And it didn't really do much at all, because that right-sided access that Arsenal have with Odegaard drifting over there, the stuff that Joe was mentioning, was very, very productive. I thought Botman, he didn't look sharp, having just come back from injury. Schär was pulled at a position time and time again. It was defensively very, very chaotic from Newcastle, which hasn't been that uncommon this season, to be honest. Then you had the midfield, which just couldn't get a foothold. They couldn't handle the Arsenal press. Then there was Isak, who was completely isolated for the game. So yeah. Newcastle are on a slide at the moment. And while this sort of thing can happen away to teams like Arsenal, it's start to see how this team is playing compared to how they played last season when they were just so solid. And even earlier in the season when they were able to get a 1-0 win against Arsenal, this team is kind of a little bit unrecognisable at the moment.
Yeah, definitely so. Unrecognisable in goal as well, Graham, with Loris Karius coming in. I think that was his first game in three seasons, if I'm correct there. So it's interesting with him because his fiance is a lady called Diletta Liotta, who's probably the most famous Italian sportscaster.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about this.
And if you look at their socials, he seems to live in Italy permanently. So I imagine him, like, on Friday night got a call from, like, Newcastle saying, you got to come back. What are you doing over there?
What a life, by the way. I would sign up for that immediately. Getting a Premier League wage but living in Italy. Sounds great to me.
And then conceding four goals on your first game back in, like, 3 years. Yeah, cool. Great.
Maybe he'll go back to his Italian villa, though, and you know, there'll be a nice glass of red wine waiting for him. Still sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, you're right. Sounds amazing, actually. So, Joe, just to conclude with Arsenal, we feel like the Porto game was an anomaly in this 2024 they're having so far, which has been pretty spectacular.
Well, I don't think it's an anomaly because we've seen them have similar issues several times. The question is, maybe the better question is, how much does it matter? And I honestly don't know that I have an answer to that question, which maybe means it's not the right one. But this team we've seen have this issue several times throughout this season, both last calendar year and now this one as well. What I will say is when there's a slightly more expansive opponent, yes, Newcastle still sat back at times, but they didn't sit back at Porto levels. Arsenal should feel good about creating those kinds of chances. When it's a really committed low block team, there are still question marks surrounding Mikel Arteta's approach and the players' execution going forward. And that could be one of the things, fellas, that defines this Premier League title race.
Wonderful stuff. I'll tell you what's not going to define this race, Joe. That's Manchester United. A 2-1 home loss to Fulham.
We can say that because Taylor's not here. Ha ha.
I would have said it anyway. Yeah, 2-1 win for Fulham at Old Trafford. Mr. Ratcliffe giving some comments to the media earlier last week. And this is what he got to show for it this weekend. Fulham's run of 11 away games without a win ended with this one. Alex Iwobi with the injury time winner on the break. Graham, an interesting game for Harry Maguire, who got a goal but then did some stuff which wasn't so hot.
That's the Harry Maguire bingo card right there. That's a bingo. Hey guys, Man United are back. Obviously a shock result, and against the grain of the wins Manchester United had strung together over the last month. But we spoke about the win over Luton last week, I certainly did, and how the same old problems were evident even in that victory and that result. So in terms of the performance, this wasn't a surprise. This is the sort of thing Manchester United have served up in countless matches this season. In most matches this season, this is how they play. Fulham were the stronger team here. It comes back to the thing I've mentioned with Manchester United time and time again this season. They just don't have any control in so many matches. And Fulham had so much space to exploit right through the middle of the pitch. They found it so easy to play through Manchester United. Alex Iwobi scores the winner, as you mentioned, Ryan, but he caused them problems throughout. I've seen some compilation videos bouncing around social media of just how poor Manchester United were in defensive transition. Time and time again, Fulham made it to the edge of the box without facing any sort of resistance. Lukic, Reid and Andreas Pereira, of course a former Manchester United player, so that's quite painful for Manchester United. They were right on top of Casemiro and Varane. They identified them as the weak point in possession. And the only surprising thing was that Fulham needed a late goal to win it. If Manchester United had snatched a point here in this game with that kind of late Harry Maguire equaliser, I don't think they would have deserved it. This was a surprise in one sense. It's always a surprise when you see the scoreline from Old Trafford. I think it's maybe a generational thing, and it's 2-1 to Fulham. But in terms of the performance, this was par for the course.
At least, Graham, you know, they'll have an easier game. Oh, wait, next weekend is Man City. Cool.
Oh. Great.
Yeah. Plenty Not of great. Time to recover for that. Great indeed. Man City, meanwhile, with a 1-0 win at Bournemouth. Graham, I kept looking at the clock thinking, why isn't it 4-0 to Man City yet? Because usually they annihilate Bournemouth if you look at the head-to-head. Obviously, City got the 3 points out of this one, but maybe not quite as impressive as we may have hoped from a City perspective.
Yeah, City have been a bit weird their last few matches. I don't know if anyone caught the midweek game last week against Brentford. I think it happened at the same time as some Champions League matches, but I caught the highlights. And it was very similar to this performance. They weren't very convincing. I don't know whether we've just set the bar too high for this team, but they weren't that good in this game. And while they got the win here, Bournemouth caused them problems. So City were strong in the first half. Very impressive by your favourite Ryan John Stones, who I'm getting the early nomination in as a player who will be a good manager. There was a clip of him going over to talk to Pep Guardiola in the Leipzig game last week, and they are very clearly talking like in-depth tactics during the match. And in this match, he's playing in a kind of hybrid central midfield centre-back position, which I think takes a lot of intelligence to do. And that allowed City to maintain control of the ball and the match. He's just so good in that role. And I don't think many players can play that role in the way that he does. But credit to Bournemouth, because they really responded in the second half. Ryan Christie dropped deeper. Scottish international, who's kind of flying under the radar a little bit. He's having an excellent season. He was then able to dictate more of the play from there. Bournemouth were able to get Tavernier and Semenyo forward quickly, and City did come under some pressure. I'm not sure Bournemouth ever created the golden opportunity they needed, despite Jonathan Pearce's best effort to imply that they had missed a million, like, gilt-edged chances to score. Joe would have been fuming at some of the commentary. But, City, by the end, I think were grateful to get out of there with 3 points, because the momentum had changed towards Bournemouth in that second half.
All right, meanwhile, at Selhurst Park, a 3-0 win for Crystal Palace over Burnley. Oliver Glasner's first game in charge is starting well. And Graham, a first Palace goal for Mr. Chris Richards.
Indeed, Chris Richards has had a bit of a rollercoaster season where there have been some periods where he's looked really good in a slightly different central midfield role. I think his long-term future will be at centre-back, which is, of course, his natural position. And yeah, first goal here for him, and a great start for Oliver Glasner, who I'm really interested to see in the Premier League. He's got a good reputation. And it's interesting because Palace have wanted a modern, forward-thinking manager for a while. They tried Frank de Boer. That didn't go so well. They tried Patrick Vieira, went a little bit better, but nothing has ever really taken root, and they just end up giving Roy Hodgson the job again. But it really feels like this time fans have had enough of that. They want something a little bit more modern, a little bit more expansive. So Glasner is an exciting appointment, and there were signs of what Palace will be against Burnley under Glasner. It's a back three, advanced wing backs, two central midfielders behind three attackers. You've got Joachim Andersen sending long diagonal balls into Munoz. You've got a lot of players getting into those attacking areas. You've got pressing. You've got energy, intensity. It is very different to Roy Hodgson ball, I'll say that.
Indeed it is. Aston Villa staying in the top four with a 4-2 win over Forest with a Douglas Luiz brace therein. What do we make of that one, Graham?
So I think we saw the two sides of Aston Villa here. We saw the good Villa and the bad Villa. There was so much that Aston Villa did well in this match. They got off to a flyer. They were 3-0 up within 39 minutes. And they were overwhelming Forest with their direct running. And Leon Bailey in particular was terrific in his game. His work for the first goal was sensational. He somehow manages to put the ball through the legs of the Forest defender. I can't quite remember who exactly it is. But the Forest defender does that thing where they lower their leg down to the ground to stop the ball going through their legs, like to fend off the nutmeg. Leon Bailey still does it, somehow squeezes the ball through the legs, and it's a tap-in for Ollie Watkins. So that was the good side of Aston Villa, but the bad side also made an appearance. So Villa have had an issue with defending set pieces this season, and that's how Forrest got their first goal through Niakite. And then Forrest were able to get in behind the Villa defence for the second goal, and they did it a number of times. So for the second goal, it's a very nice finish by Morgan Gibbs-White. And there was a spell after the second goal for Forrest where it was very open, and that wasn't what Villa needed at that point in the game when they're 3-2 up. Obviously, they get a fourth goal to settle it. So I don't want to take too much away from what was a very strong attacking performance, but some of the other stuff was just a bit on edge, and some of the control that they had earlier in their season, it feels like they've let some of that slip through their fingers a bit.
Okay, still fancy them for the top four? How do we feel about that?
Not so much now. I feel like they might get squeezed out. Look, it's been a sensational season. The fact that we're heading into March and they're still in that discussion tells you a lot about how successful they have been. But if I think three of those positions are already gone, I kind of think Tottenham maybe, and possibly even Manchester United. I know Manchester United have just come off the back of a defeat, but it feels like that's the way it's trending. But a top six finish would still be incredible for Villa.
Yeah. Europa League feels right for many, many reasons, shall we
Certainly
say.
For Unai Emery.
Indeed. Brighton with a 1-1 draw against Everton. Lewis Dunk with an injury time header in that one, earning a point for Brighton. Did notice that Billy Gilmore got a red card
nope,
in this one.
Didn't happen.
Well, he did the exact same foul that Harry Maguire did in the Man United Fulham game, and somehow he got a red and Maguire didn't.
So, that's the cool. North-South divide right there, encapsulated Ryan Bailey. Yeah.
I blame the MLS replacement referees who were in charge of that one, frankly. That was
justified.
That was Everton now drawn four of their last five games in the Premier League. They're going to need to get more wins to pull away from the relegation points. Although, did I see, Graham, just before we started recording, that they've had
Indeed.
Some points added back to their tally on appeal as well, right?
Yeah, so they're 4 points better off now. The 10-point deduction has become a 6-point deduction on appeal. I believe that lifts them up to 15th place. So that immediately improves the situation for them. But there's a second charge coming that is currently in the appeal process. So maybe another points deduction will send them back into trouble again.
Oh boy. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk Bundesliga, Liga, MLS, and much more. Back shortly.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Total Soccer Show, welcome back to the weekend review. Due to some internet gremlins in the Arizona area, Joe Lowry has dropped off. We're hoping he joins us back on the podcast shortly. But for now, it's just the gruesome twosome, the Brits here. Graham. Mm. Do you think we can hold it up?
It was the replacement refs, I think. That's to blame.
We blame them once again. But in the meantime, we're going to go to Germany, where Bayer Leverkusen, they keep doing those dubs, Graham. A 2-1 win over Mainz this weekend. According to Squawker, Xabi Alonso's Bayer have set the record for the longest unbeaten run across all competitions in German soccer history. 33 games, zero defeats. Good stuff.
Yeah, not bad. I have to admit, I didn't watch this one live because I was watching the other big match on Friday night, Partick Thistle versus Dunfermline Athletic in the Scottish Championship. I presume you were watching that one as well, Ryan?
Well, it was on at the bar I was in, yeah.
Of course, right. You couldn't avoid it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's hard to.
So I didn't see much of this match beyond the highlights, but I did catch Granit Xhaka's fake-out injury celebration and included it in today's newsletter because I enjoyed it so much. I'm not sure if it was meant to be funny or what, but it was certainly something. I very much enjoyed Xabi Alonso's reaction, which wasn't. It didn't say to me he was too amused with the fake out.
I have a theory here, Graham. I think he was trying to do, you know, there was a trend a while ago. You do the fake out and then you do like the twerky butt thing straight afterwards. I think he wanted to do that, but he got crowded and hounded so much in the celebration that he couldn't do the twerky butt thing. That's my theory. I think it got ruined.
I actually have no idea what you're talking about. A fake out injury into a twerky butt thing. I'm going to have to Google this.
That was the whole thing, right? You'd limp away injured and then you suddenly go, and start wiggling your tush. That was the way it used to.
John McGinn needs to get on this celebration immediately.
Indeed. All right, talking about celebrations, there was some in Munich for Bayern Munich's 2-1 win over RB Leipzig. Harry Kane on the double in this one, closing the gap at the top for Bayern to 8 points to Leverkusen.
Yeah, the result of this match was obviously a bam for Bayern Munich, who have had some pretty stinking results recently.
A bam,
I'm not sure the
say?
Performance. Yeah, bam. Like if you've got a burn, B-A-L-M. You know, a bam.
Oh, a bomb. Like, thank you, Graham.
Is that my Scottish accent making that difficult to work that way?
I thought you were saying like a bam, which means like a loaf of bread or a baby or something.
Ah, right. A bam margera. Yeah, from Jackass. Yeah, I'm not sure the performance was all that great from Bayern Munich. The first half in particular was weird, where neither team was really able to impose themselves. And you could sense the uncertainty from both teams. Of course, RB Leipzig have had a bad 2024 so far. And neither team really took a grip of things. The midfield, I thought, was again an issue for Bayern Munich. Goretzka and Pavlovic, they started in the middle. There's just not a natural playmaker in there. And Leipzig were able to get through the midfield a number of times. We've seen Bayern Munich have trouble against quick transition teams this season, including RB Leipzig earlier in the season. For the equaliser, the way Leipzig were able to play straight through the middle was a concern for Bayern, exactly what I'm just saying there. And there was another Benjamin Cesco chance not long before that where something similar happened, but Harry Kane was back to being the Bayern Munich band-aid with two goals, and both finishes were excellent. Kane did actually miss a few good opportunities in this game, but in contrast to other matches, Bayern were finding him with sort of, he was doing that very Harry Kane thing of hidden runs behind Leipzig defenders in the box and then deep crosses from the kind of the fullback, wingback areas. And that gave Bayern Munich a lot of joy in this match. And he hit the post with a header in the first half that might have ended up in the net. But he was taking up good positions again, involved again, and the two finishes back across the goalkeeper are classic Kane. I've talked recently about classic Lewandowski finishes. I feel like the two goals in this game are classic Kane finishes.
All right, Graham, let's move the conversation to Spain. Why don't we? We had Barcelona with a 4-0 win over Getafe, Getafe side featuring Mason Greenwood. So I'm kind of glad they got beat down.
Yeah, me too. And this was probably the best I've seen Barcelona play in a while. And there was a bit of anger in their performance, which was good. I know Ilkay Gundogan has publicly spoken about wanting to see that inside the dressing room. And I thought it came out in this performance. Interestingly, Barca made good use of long balls forward in this game, which is not something you would naturally associate with Barcelona or Xavi Hernandez, who of course is a bit of a short pass merchant, a very good short pass merchant. But it worked really well, and that's how Rafinha scores the first goal. They used it a number of times to get Yao Felix into good positions as well. I also thought Frenkie de Jong was tremendous with his ability to drive the ball forward, open up space for Rafinha, and Felix making runs in behind. Another goal for Lewandowski as well. He's in good form at the moment, all of a sudden. So, this was pretty much all positive for Barcelona, for once, at least.
Yeah, good stuff. Meanwhile, at the Future Eras Tour location of the Bernabeu, Real Madrid with a 1-0 win over Sevilla. Sergio Ramos back in town, Graham.
Yeah, that was the main headline here, was that Sergio Ramos was back at the Bernabeu, or whatever we're calling it now, the Future Taylor Swift Eras Tour stadium venue. And how did the Real Madrid fans thank him for over a decade of service and winning all those trophies? By whistling him every time he touched the ball. It wasn't a particularly warm welcome. Real Madrid fans are weird with welcoming former players back to the club. I saw, as a troll to Sergio Ramos, Alvaro Arbeloa. I can't even remember what team he was playing for, but recently he played a game at the Bernabeu, and he captained Real Madrid in one game, right? And they give him a big banner that said Eterno Capitan, like captain forever, and Sergio Ramos gets nothing, having been their captain for like 12 years. But anyway, yeah, that was the pre-match headline. Once the game got underway, Sevilla made this match really difficult for Real Madrid. They packed their defensive line with players. They made it tough for Real Madrid to play through them. I thought Vinicius and Brahim Diaz did well to get through the block a number of times. And Mendy and Vasquez being high as the fullbacks also allowed Real Madrid to keep the pressure on. But they did need a few saves from Andre Lunin, who seems to be growing in stature with every game that I see him. A couple of years ago, he was written off as a bit of a flop for Real Madrid, but he's come in, obviously, with Courtois injured, and he's doing a very good Thibaut Courtois impression right now. In the end, though, it's an incredible strike by Luka Modric that gets the job done, and that's the thing about playing against Real Madrid. Even if you defend well and ride your luck and have your structure set and play a good game, all things that Sevilla did in this game, there's always a Real Madrid superstar who can stick one into the top corner from 25 yards out. So they weren't very happy, Sevilla, after this game. They thought maybe there was a Real Madrid player. What happens is the ball comes in from the right side. They thought there was a Real Madrid player offside in that moment, and then the ball pops out to Luka Modric and he sticks it in the top corner. So they weren't very happy with the decision making, but their performance was encouraging because it's been a difficult season this season for Sevilla so far.
Modric scoring in a game with Sergio Ramos at the Bernabeu doesn't feel very 2024 to me. It doesn't feel very swift 2024 era for me, Graham.
No, it doesn't at all. And you could see in the celebrations, if we're to be sincere for a moment, you could see in the celebrations the way that Modric celebrated and the Bernabeu celebrated. There was almost like an unspoken recognition. There's not going to be many more Luka Modric moments like that. It's an open secret at this point that he is going to finally leave Real Madrid at the end of the season to go to somewhere like Saudi Arabia. So yeah, I think these moments are to be cherished for Real Madrid. There won't be many more of them.
Indeed. We go to Italy now, where Inter Milan is still absolutely bossing it. A 4-0 win over Lecce this weekend. A brace from Lautaro Martinez. His Serie A goal tally is up to 101 in total. Very impressive. Inter on course for their 20th Scudetto. They've won 10 games in all competitions. They're the only Serie A team yet to lose on the road this season. I think we covered them quite a few times in recent pods, Graham. They're still very good. They're playing very different soccer to the rest of Italy. And Big dog. Interrupt.
Yeah, they're in a league of their own. I had this, I was kind of second or even third screening this match over the weekend, so I don't have kind of in-depth tactical thoughts or anything, but every time I looked up, they seemed to be scoring a goal, to the point where at the start of the second half, I was like, is this highlights that I'm watching? But no, that's just how good Inter Milan are right now.
They are indeed. AC Milan, meanwhile, with a 1-1 draw against local rivals Atalanta. Rafael Leal with the goal in that one. And Juventus, their first league win in 5 games, a 3-2 win over Frosinone. We had Weston McKennie with a brace of assists and also an injury.
Yeah, it was a mixed bag for Weston McKennie. 2 assists for both for Dusan Vlahovic in this game, who I think Vlahovic has now got 10 goals in his last 9 games. That's one of my unpopular opinions, is that with the right service, Dusan Vlahovic is like an elite level centre forward. So the right service looks like Weston McKennie. But he has now got, as you mentioned, Ryan, a dislocated shoulder injury. I haven't seen any reporting on how long that'll rule him out for. I know dislocated shoulders can be quite bad and can rule out players for quite some time. So let's hope that's not serious. As for Juventus, yeah, their long wait for a win is over. They hadn't won a match since the middle of January. They made hard work of this game. They needed a late winner through Regani. That's where the real drama was in this game. A 94th minute winner. And the finish was like squeezed in from a tight angle. It wasn't a sitter. It wasn't a clear opportunity. But what Juventus had going for them earlier in the season was Allegri ball and its effectiveness and how they made matches stodgy. And Juventus's defensive record in the first half of the season was absolutely fantastic. It was one of the best in European football. That's now completely gone. It's entertaining to watch them now because it's pure chaos, but Juventus aren't going to catch Inter playing this way. And they do have a bit of a crossroads moment coming this summer. Do they stick with Allegri? Do they stick with Allegri ball? Do they rebuild? Because they're not catching Inter Milan playing this way.
No. What do you think they'll do there, Graham? I just assume they'd stick with him, but it does seem like the tide's turning a little bit, doesn't it?
Zidane. That's what I want. Zidane in that role.
I would love that. I would personally love to see that. We'll see how that one unfolds. We go now to Joe Lowry's MLS Corner, or JLM LSC, as all the cool kids are calling it. You may have noticed, listen, Joe Lowry's dropped out of the podcast at this point due to technical difficulties.
The corner's going to be empty.
It's an empty corner, but Graham and Ryan are going to try and do their best. It was good, Graham, to see MLS return for its full schedule this past weekend. I particularly enjoyed having staggered kickoffs throughout the weekend rather than all sort of lumped on the Saturday. So you could actually, you know, watch the games. That was good, right?
Yeah, that was good. So we had Columbus Crew against Atlanta United and LAFC versus Seattle Sounders as the early kickoffs on Saturday. Very convenient for me because they were on at times that I could actually watch those games live. Not so much the LA Galaxy Inter Miami match, which kicked off at 2 a.m. for me, but I did catch up on that game this morning. So yeah, this feels like, we spoke about this last season, how I do enjoy having the big slate of games all at once on the Saturday evening, but just selecting like 3 or 4 marquee matches and putting them in a slot of their own, that's the sweet spot for me. And MLS did that on opening weekend. I know it wasn't really opening weekend because there was a game on the Wednesday, but I'm considering this opening weekend. So let's hope that they continue to do that and we can stay in that sweet spot for viewers.
Yeah, and the league getting the most mileage possible out of Leo Messi in this opening week, having played 2 games already. A Sunday night game against LA Galaxy and Inter Miami ending in a 1-1 draw. Messi with the late equaliser after a controversial red card, should we say. The MLS replacement refs maybe not doing themselves a massive service in that one, Graham. That was very late for you, of course. I'm not sure if you caught that one.
I caught that one this morning. So I caught a good number of the games. Inter Miami in that match, I thought, were relatively fortunate to come away with a point. I thought the way that Greg Vanney set up the Galaxy to basically just defend their own box and then hit out on the counter. It's not really how Greg Vanney wants his team to play ordinarily, but against Inter Miami, you have to do what gives you the best chance of a result. And they could have been, you know, 2-0 up by the kind of the final phase of this match. But of course, once you've got Messi and Alba linking up lately, they did for the equaliser, and once you're down to 10 men after a dodgy red card decision, then I guess anything can happen. I thought Columbus were impressive in their game. Of course, a 1-0 win over Atlanta. It's just good to see Columbus doing Columbus things again. Quick ball circulation, counter-pressing, coordinated attacking play, Cucho scoring important goals, also missing penalties, which was slightly surprising in that match, but the Crew still look like the Crew in terms of their profile. I expect we'll see Atlanta warm up over the next few matches, certainly once they get back to Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Only one away win in MLS on opening weekend, which just tells you how difficult it is to play on the road in this league. It was another home win for Portland Timbers. Some performance by Portland in this game, given, you know, the Phil Neville thing that they're having to deal with this season. But Eric Williamson was really good now in a more advanced role. Anthony scored twice, Brazilian winger. Colorado, obviously, still a work in progress, but they were really, really poor in this game. The amount of space that they afforded the Portland Timbers, it just felt like they were given freedom to run through them at will, and that's how we ended up with a 4-1 scoreline. And then finally, Ryan, I caught a bit of Charlotte. I was interested. The real reason I watched a lot of that game was to see if I could spot you playing a guitar on a Capo stand. But I thought Charlotte in this game, look, NYCFC, I predicted that they would be a lot stronger this season than they were last year. I think the building blocks are in place for a better season. I think they have recruited generally well. I wasn't overly impressed with them in this game, but I give Dean Smith and Charlotte some credit for that. I thought they were tough to play against. They limited NYCFC. There just seems to be, and Ryan, you can provide your perspective on this, there just seems to be a maybe greater stability about that team. Maybe it won't be as entertaining, maybe not as chaotic as it has been the last two seasons for Charlotte, but in terms of putting points on the boards and getting positive results, I would suggest that's maybe a good thing.
I hope it would be more entertaining than what's been served out the past couple of seasons, to be honest, Graham. And it was, I think, so far this weekend. But you're quite right there. I wouldn't give NYCFC an awful lot of credit for this game, particularly the first half. I thought they offered absolutely nothing, but they got into it a little bit more in the second half. But yeah, Charlotte is a completely different ball game, to use a poor phrase at this point. Like, you know, Dean Smith, you expect him to come in, make a team hard to beat, and then build from there. And it seems like already after the first game week, we're seeing those improvements. Big upgrade on Latanzio, the previous coach. More of that sort of possession with purpose, a lot more attacking impetus from this team as well. So I'm really excited from what I've seen so far. As I say, it's hard because we've only seen them play against this one side who I don't think offered very much, but really, really encouraging. And yes, 62,000 people at the stadium in Charlotte as well, which is awesome. It's like the city is embracing the team, which is good to see too.
So I know we like to kind of rib you about Charlotte FC, but that's genuinely very impressive. Like 62,000, that was surely the biggest attendance in MLS on opening weekend. I can't think of one off the top of my head. But it's very impressive to get that kind of turnout for any game. So yeah, and it also looked like a pretty incredible atmosphere. I saw like them doing the Poznan before kickoff.
Yeah.
So look, good kits, good atmosphere, good crowds. For your sake, I hope Charlotte have a good team this season. They're due.
Thank you. Got a good kit, definitely. I really like the kit, even if it is $200. But the Poznan thing that they do before the game now is brilliant because it makes the stadium shake. Bank of America Stadium's a big NFL stadium. And when the fans first started doing it, the stadium ops were like, oh my God, the stadium shakes. NFL fans have never done something like this before. So it's quite weird when you're in a bowl that big and it starts to shake. But it is a lot of fun. It looks amazing as well on the camera. So yeah, very, very good. Very good production, good win for Charlotte in the first week. One more MLS question for you, Graham. Would you like to know, according to research over the past five seasons, who the dirtiest team in MLS is?
Oh, wow. Red Bulls? Red Bull football? Kind of like Foley? I don't know.
The answer is Inter Miami, according to research from Casino Reviews.
Wow.
Have they played five seasons? I don't know. Either way, they are the dirtiest, average highest rate of red cards per game in the entire league. Of the 125 games played over the last five seasons, the team averages 2.29 yellow cards per game and a red card every eight games. They also commit 12.72 fouls per game. Dirty. Naughty boys.
Yikes.
Dirty.
Yeah. Wait until Rodri signs for them in 5 years' time.
Oh boy! I mean, Pepe's still going to be going in about 5 years' time as well, so he'll probably come over and cause some.
That should be the next strategy for Inter Miami. Post Messi, sign the greatest team of poop houses football has ever seen. That's how you keep the season ticket sales strong and that price high.
There you go. That's how Suarez gets his statue eventually. I like the sound of that. Very good. One other note: there was a lot of derbies in Argentina this past weekend. I learned that, Graham, from the Soccer Dispatch, available in all good inboxes, courtesy of Graham Ruthven. But we had the Superclásico, River Plate and Boca with a 1-1 draw at the Monumental, which is still the most amazing stadium name you can have. Your stadium is called Monumental. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like having a stadium called Epic. Yeah. At the Epic.
Good stuff. All right, head to the Soccer Dispatch for more info on that and much, much more. But Graham, I think we have just about weekend reviewed here. We're down 50% on staff members, but here we are. We've done okay.
Yeah, we did okay. Great contribution from Joe in the second half of the podcast. Hi, I'm Jill Lowry. Oh, he's back! He's actually back, just right on cue. I was doing my impression. I don't need to do my impression anymore.
Guys, did I do it? This is not as good as my audio quality should normally sound, but tell me, please, I need a yes. Am I really back?
You're back, but we are literally signing off for the podcast.
So say no! Goodbye.
Let's say goodbye to the ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. Joe, why don't you tell us, no. we did MLS Corner, but there will be more MLS action on Tuesday's feed from you and David Gass, will there not?
Yes, there absolutely will be. I think Taylor's going to be back for that show as well. Guys, I'm sorry I left you high and dry. I was so excited that maybe I was going to be back. I dug out this old microphone and none of it mattered. Listeners, apologies. We'll have lots of good MLS stuff tomorrow.
No problem.
Ryan, are you impressed by my Joe Lowry impression? It's got really good recently.
I was going to say, yeah, it's amazing. You've come on a long way, as we all have. But for now, Joe Lowry, thank you very much for that, particularly that second half of the pod contribution. Great stuff from you.
Yeah, some of my sharpest work ever, guys. Thanks for carrying on without me.
Graham Rutherford, thank you for carrying the ship as always, my good man.
Thank you, Ryan Bailey.
And listener, thank you very much for joining us on this podcast. We'll be back on the feed, as we noted, very shortly. But for now, bye! You gotta slice it!
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.